You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Gerislein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerislein. Thanks so much for tuning in. Going to be with you for the next hour. I hope you like what we talk about here. If so, make sure you swing on out to the State Fair and visit our booth at the corner of Judson and Nelson. Subscribe to Outdoor News. Get a free cap if you subscribe out there. Tim Lesmeister joining me now. Tim, it is the last full weekend of August. Can you believe that? It's September already here on Tuesday. We got bear seasons kicking off, mourning dove seasons, a couple of big migratory bird seasons next Saturday, the 5th, with early teal season and early Canada goose.
I always consider this a period of transition, and it always starts with game fair. Whenever I see that game fair just came and went, I think to myself, okay, it's time to enter this transition period where we go from the fishing, the lakes, catching walleyes, catching panfish. And now we're shifting into that period where it's all about waterfowling, preparing for deer hunting. I mean, the archery deer season is literally right around the corner. And I always like this period. I think it's kind of fun to see, you know, the transition from fishing to hunting and all of the stuff that we've got to look forward to here as this leaves start to change and the weather starts to cool.
Another thing that is underway, it started August 15th, and it's a fairly early year for wild rice. I did get out a couple times this past week, Tim, carved out some time and got into north central Minnesota, somewhere between the Twin Cities and Duluth. That's all I'll say. I got out and did some wild ricing. Everyone thought it was going to be an absolutely bumper year. It's been okay, better than 2 years ago for sure, and probably on par with last year so far. One of my ricing buddies thinks that the rice didn't get pollinated well enough this year, something like that. But we had a 100-pound day last week, came in with 100 pounds, me and another guy who knew what he was doing. I was sore. I'll tell you what, my partner, all he wanted to do was push pull, which generally I embrace because push pulling, I think, is the harder part of the process. But 6 straight hours of flailing rice, man, I was feeling it by the end of the day.
I bet. See, I think they should ban wild ricing because it's just harassing bugs. I'm teasing. I'm joking. Don't start sending me emails saying we can't ban wild ricing. The reason I say that is because you don't realize how many bugs there are in the swamps until you go out there and start beating the rice.
Totally.
Oh my gosh.
No, absolutely. And there's also something called a rice worm. They look kind of like something you use for ice fishing. They're just a short little insect larva. Where we were ricing this past week, I've never seen so many rice worms as I did in this spot. If you don't like creepy crawlies, wild ricing is not for you because there are a lot of insects, there's a lot of spiders, and there's these rice worms. I mean, I changed clothes before I got in the car to drive home, and I was still picking off rice worms off myself and, you know, flinging them out the window for the birds to find. I had a few people, a few women, I don't mean to pick on women here, but a few gals who have said, oh, I'd love to go wild ricing with you, Rob. And I've stopped and I said, that's great. I'd love to bring you out. But I mean, the rice is literally moving with insects when you're in the canoe. That there's a lot of creepy crawlies. You got to be comfortable with that. And I find a lot of people after I tell them that are a little less interested in participating.
But the reward, the benefit that you get from being able to take all of the interaction with these these insects is worth it. I mean, wild rice, it doesn't get much better than that. And boy, I'll tell you what, you get a batch of fresh wild rice and man, you're eating good.
I don't do the processing. We do take it to a processor and pay a couple bucks a pound. But hand harvested wild rice like that, you go in some of these boutique grocery stores in the Twin Cities, you can pay 20 bucks a pound for it. So, you know, if I have to put a couple bucks into processing, it's worth it. And I love it. I eat it all winter. I don't eat a lot during the summer. Tim, I find wild rice is more of a cool weather food here.
Oh, yeah, I agree. To me, the wild rice recipes, just like a big hot pot of chili, that's all when the weather cools down.
Well, that was a lot of wild rice talk to kick off this week's show. A quick date to remember I would throw out there, Tim. Thursday, September 10th is the deadline. If you want to get a shot at an antlerless deer permit, you need to buy your license by Thursday the 10th. That's become less and less of an issue as so many of these zones offer multiple deer under a tag. But nonetheless, if that's something that if you want to take a doe during your deer hunting for the firearms or the muzzleloader season, make sure you buy your license by that September 10th. And I tell you, another good thing to remind folks, Tim, is people should buy their deer license in advance. And I haven't bought mine yet, but you should buy your deer license now because, you know, there have been years where, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people buy their license two nights before the season. If that happens this year, I'm afraid we're going to overwhelm this new ELS. We saw that a little bit with the bear tag, the surplus bear tags, and that was a much smaller volume of people.
Yeah, I made the mistake of waiting till the last minute to buy a Minnesota fishing license when I went out with Gary Roach on that whitefish trip, which is featured in this edition of the print edition of Outdoor News. And you know what happened to me? I went to get my license a couple days before and it didn't work. And I thought, well, it's just obviously something that needs to take a little time. I'll do it tomorrow. Next day, I just didn't get around to it. So I got to Grand Rapids and I went online the night before I was supposed to go in. It still didn't work. I couldn't figure it out. It kept kicking me off and not allowing me to buy. And so I thought, I'll just go to a gas station tomorrow morning. I jumped in Roach's wagon. We went to Holiday. We went to a few other stations. I said, no, you get your licenses online now. Did not work. So I called the number and I said, something's going on here. And they checked, and when they merged these systems, I guess they had merged some systems for this new ELS, that I had two names in the system.
Yeah.
And didn't know how to pick which one was me. And so it wouldn't give me a license because it just didn't have a clue. It was, I confused it. I finally got that worked out. The woman that I talked to on the phone was great, and she took care of getting one of my names out, and I got my license before I got to the boat landing, which worked out just beautifully. But I started early, and I probably would have been much more frustrated, and it would have taken me at least another couple hours if I hadn't done that.
There's a lot of that, Tim, you know, where there's duplicate names or, you know, like if your birthday is off by one digit, things like that. And the DNR plowed through a lot of that when they launched the system, but they're going to have to plow through a lot more as people engage with the system for the first time. To your point, yeah, you can work it out fairly quickly and easily if you're contacting these folks at the info center when they've got some time. If you're doing it the night before deer season with 30,000 other people, you're going to be in trouble. Do that in advance so that you're not overwhelming the system with your purchase. Like I say, 30, 40,000 other people. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisline and Tim Lesmeister kicking off this week's show. We should talk waterfowl a little bit, Tim. We got waterfowl seasons kicking off. We had a nice piece by Torin McCormick talking about hunting waterfowl in South Dakota. And what's interesting about the timing of that piece is, if you don't have a license to hunt South Dakota this fall, there's no way you're going to do it in 2026. The application process is much earlier in the year. But I ran it now because people are thinking about waterfowling. And the idea was, if this is something you want to do for 2027, start thinking about it and plan ahead so that you can apply. It's a great, great place to hunt waterfowl. And people who take the time to apply in advance usually get drawn, I think. And they enjoy a lot of great waterfowling in the state without too many other people duck hunting.
And make sure that you get some property if you're going to hunt on private land and you have, you know, some ability to make connections in that regard. Because I'll tell you, hunting in fields, if you're going to field hunt these ducks, water hunt these ducks, whatever you're going to do, if you can hunt on private property, it's going to be a lot better for you to do that. Although there is a lot of public land available over there as well. So, yeah, I'd say South Dakota, You know, the reason why it's so good for waterfowl is that everybody that goes to South Dakota is hunting pheasants. You know, they're all pheasant crazy in South Dakota. I hunt ducks in North Dakota. You know, I'm not one of those guys that wants to go down to, you know, South Dakota, even though it might be better because, you know, I just like the ability to hunt just about anywhere. It's not posted and you got all the plots land in North Dakota, but South Dakota's, man, it's incredibly great for pheasant, waterfowl, just about anything that flies.
A nice little story about the plots program out there in North Dakota by Doug Glear. If folks want to check that out, there's what, 900,000 acres of plots land where you can get access out there. That's a good reminder.
If you want to find this private property, there's an app called OnX Hunt.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna tell you right now that it's such a great app that you have to have it. If you're a hunter and you're going anywhere to hunt, I kid you not, get OnX Hunt. It's just a phone app. And man, I'm telling you right now, it can put you onto spots that you would never, ever, ever find if you didn't have this app.
OnX is a great company. They're a conservation-minded company. They are involved with this roadless rule stuff, which maybe we'll talk about more later. And they got their OnX Fish app, too. And they're a strong supporter of this program. Folks listening know that they hear the OnX commercials all the time. We appreciate their support, and I really admire what they're doing there. One last waterfowling thing, Tim. It's dry out there, and a couple of stories in this week's paper pointing out that waterfowlers need to plan ahead for launching their boats and be prepared for low water while they're out duck hunting.
Yeah, and whenever you get lower water and you get higher winds, you get bigger wave action. So yeah, it's something you need to be very careful about. And of course, it's going to make scouting much easier. You know, you're going to know where these ducks and geese are congregating, because when the water's low and you don't have as many spots to look at, scouting becomes way, way, way more easier.
Tim, I got to grab a break, but you'll swing back. We'll talk at the end of the show like we normally do.
Absolutely.
All right. That's Tim Lesmeister. Thanks, Tim. We'll circle back. This is Outdoor News Radio. Stick around. More of the broadcast after these messages.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. OnX Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, OnX Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download OnX Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Huntin' Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best Huntin' Buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance Dog Food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Fall is coming, so waterfowlers, listen up. When birds are cupped over the spread, the last thing you need is a misfire. The Rite Ace's patented Inertia Plus system guarantees full bolt closure every single time. It handles light loads through 3.5-inch magnums with oversized controls for cold weather gloves, and its airy recoil pad reduces felt recoil up to 30%. Get elite performance and a lifetime warranty without the $2,000 price tag. Visit your dealer or RiteUSA.com today.
There are a ton of social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you have someone in need of an organ transplant, visit MatchingDonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life. MatchingDonors.com.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring critical habitat for nearly 90 years. We're working toward our next million-acre milestone, and we need your help. Whether you're great at selling event tickets, securing donations, lining up sponsors, or pitching in wherever, there's a role for everyone. Join the team that's making a real difference. Head to ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you like the content here, please check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions. You can read that digital version on your tablet or on your phone or on your laptop. You can subscribe to any of these forms at the State Fair. Also, we've got a booth out there at the corner of Judson and Nelson right behind the DNR stage. You get a free cap if you subscribe at the fair. State Fair time must mean some fall hunting seasons are kicking off. There's a whole bunch that are going to get going next week. On September 1st, we've got several. And then on the 5th, Saturday, September 5th, there's a number happening. But I want to talk about the first big game opener of the year. That starts on September 1st, this Tuesday. It's the Black Bear opener, and I've got a great guest who's going to join us. It's been a little over a year since he was last with us. His name is Andrew Try. He's the Bear Project Leader for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, based in Grand Rapids. Andrew, thanks a lot for carving out some time. I know it's very busy for you right now. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about bear permits this year. They're up a little bit from last year. Is that right? We're at, 5330 in the quota area. We've got 15 permit areas, I think, in the quota area. Is that up a bit from last year?
Yep, that's up. It's been some small increases the last few years as the bear population has recovered in some of those kind of traditional edge zones of the quota areas. But yep, we're up and the bear population is stable to increasing in most parts of the state.
And for listeners not familiar with bear hunting in Minnesota, that quota area kind of encompasses, roughly the northeast third of the state? Does that be a good way of putting it?
Yeah, that's right, Rob. There's that's the part of the state where you have to put in for a lottery in the springtime, and then you find out and buy your license in early August. But the rest of the state is over-the-counter, no quota, so you can buy your license the day before you want to hunt, even, and then go hunting that next day.
And there are some really good bear hunting areas, especially along the edge of that quota zone. And then even, you and I have spoken in the past, we've even had guys take a bear or two down in southeast Minnesota, right?
Yeah, that's right. The largest bears that are harvested in the state generally are in the either northwest part of that no quota or kind of on that edge in that Pine County country. We do have some large bears in the quota area, but that rich oak forest that we have in that transition zone part of the state makes for really big bears.
Yeah, a lot of food, a lot of natural food, and probably some agriculture. That doesn't hurt either. If you're trying to grow big bears, I suppose some of the agriculture people aren't thrilled about it. But that's a whole other issue. We don't have to get into, Andrew. So what was the harvest last year? Was it like a little less than 3,000? Is that right?
Yeah, it was about 2,700, give or take.
Okay, and where has the harvest kind of been? What was our all-time record? Was that just a couple years ago?
Yeah, there was a large spike in 2024. We had a statewide food failure and really high harvest. I think the statewide record would have been either in 95 or 2001, where we were killing just under 5,000 bears.
Wow.
But we had something like 20,000 hunters afield that year. So vastly different, in 24 than those olden days.
For someone who applies every year in that quota area, how often do they get drawn? Do you know that off the top of head? Is there an average? Is it every 2 years, every 3 years?
It really depends where you hunt. So there are some zones like 51 where you're drawing, every 2 or 3 years. But some of the high demand zones like 45, that's kind of the Brainerd to Wadena country up to Little Falls. You're looking at probably a 5 or 6 year wait just because there's a tremendous number of people that apply there. And it's close to the city. So, lots of people have recreation land up in that country. So it does take longer there, but the quality is really good. Success rates are above 50% most years.
There's an interesting influence on bear hunter success rates. It's not necessarily the number of hunters, although that influences somewhat. It's more all about what natural foods are on the landscape. And some of these years where you have really high harvests are years that there's not a lot of natural food out there. It's a little bit of a counterintuitive inverse proportion. Bad years for food for bears means they're more likely to come into baits, right? And that boosts hunter results. What's the forecast for this year?
You're going to get the same answer for every biologist that you answer. Our default question is, it depends. Mm-hmm. I would say, in general, we've had an above average food year across much of the state. We had a really good spring, and then the waterworks kind of shut off midsummer. Right. And so there are places in the state where the land is quite dry and crispy. All of the berries are pretty much all dried up. But you go 10 miles over into the next watershed, and there's cherries galore and raspberries and that sort of thing. So it's just highly variable this year.
Right.
In general, red oak acorns and pin oak acorns are producing across wide parts of the state. So if you've got a lot of oak in that country, maybe hang out at your baits a little bit longer than you normally would, and don't give up so easy. Oftentimes those acorns fall right on opener or a couple days before. And so it takes a while for those to be exhausted before the bears will come back in. In general, I think it'll probably be an average or slightly above average harvest would be my guess, just because things are variable and dry.
Yeah, and it does seem like a pretty good mast year for acorns, the bit that I have been out. And so that's a good, reliable food source. But like you say, it's patchy. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisline. We're chatting with Andrew Try. He is the Bear Project Leader for the Minnesota DNR. Bear hunting kicks off this Tuesday, September 1st. Goes till the 18th of October. Do I have that right, Andrew?
18th of October.
Okay, so we've kind of set the table here for the hunting side of things. We've got some fairly big changes with the new ELS system, correct? And that's going to influence how folks register their bears. There's some changes out there. You want to speak to that a little bit, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. So with our new licensing system comes some kind of new procedures. And what I'll talk about here is for bears, it's going to be really similar for deer and turkey and all those other species you have to have traditionally tags for. The couple of big ones is we have no physical tags on the animal anymore. That's a big change. We're not going to have those blue pieces of paper like the olden days. And there's also no telephone registration. So you used to be able to call in your harvest and register that way. That's not an option with this new system. So how you do it now is it depends on how you bought your license. If you got a paper license, either at an agent or you printed it at home by yourself, you'll notch those tags just like you did before, but just keep it in your pocket. You don't have to attach it to the animal. And then register as you would normally, go online or to an agent to get that registration complete. If you are a mobile user where you have the app, that's where things are a little bit different. And you had to indicate this at purchase. So for you deer hunters, think about that when you're buying your license going forward. But if you're a mobile app user, just log in before you go afield. If you don't have good cell service at Bear Camp, you can still validate and register your bear. But you need to make sure that you have those things loaded on your phone ahead of time. And then when you get back to service, make sure you open that app so it syncs with the overall server. It's not going to necessarily pull your data off of the app by itself. You have to actually open it up and fire it up when you get back to town, and then it'll sync up with our servers and you're all good to go.
Yeah, I would encourage folks to download the app, register it as a user, and get that all set up, you know, in good time before you go hunting. Yeah, buy your license and feel comfortable with the app. I could see some people saying, well, hey, it's all on my phone now. I'll just do it in the car or on the way to my tree stand. Don't do that. It probably took me a solid 12, 15 minutes to familiarize myself with the app. Devote a little bit of time to that and do it the right way.
Absolutely. It's well worth taking the time ahead of time so you're not in a pinch later.
And before we let you go, Andrew, we got the annual press release. Look out for collared bears. Tell us a little bit about those collared bears. We want folks to try to avoid harvesting those, correct?
Yep, absolutely. So we've got 56 bears across the state. Most of them are north of Grand Rapids in the Chippewa National Forest, or they're near Camp Ripley and in Brainerd and Baxter, kind of in that Pillsbury State Forest area. But they do migrate a fair distance during the fall when they're chasing those acorns around. There's a couple near Duluth as well. But we're asking hunters to pass on those bears. They have big cattle style ear tags, and they're almost all females. We only have two males in the sample right now. We are monitoring them from when they were yearlings till they have that first litter of cubs. So it's a fair bit of time before we get any piece of data off of them. because we're looking at how reproduction has changed. If you happen to have a bear with small tags that are an inch long by maybe a quarter or a half inch wide, those are just bears that we've handled. They're not part of the reproduction study, and feel free for hunters to take those. Just call the telephone number that's on those tags right away. It's not illegal to shoot a collared bear, but if you do, please call that telephone number on the ear tags. We want to get that collar back. Some of them will have a heart monitor implanted on the bear's left side. This is from some collaborative effort with the University of Minnesota's Heart Lab to look at how you can learn from the bear's hibernation physiology to translate to coma patients and people that are bedbound to not lose their muscle mass over a long period of time.
That's fascinating research, and it's also important research in terms of the first half of what you described. You're trying to understand the bear range a little bit better and the reproductivity of these animals to manage bears better, so we can, you know, maybe have more bears on the landscape and more guys can fill their tag, right? Those 26,000 can have a few more tags to choose from.
Absolutely. It's how we keep our finger on the pulse of the bear population. And the more information we have, the better management decisions we can make.
Well, thanks for all you do. It looks like it's going to be a great season. I'd encourage folks to go to mndnr.gov and just search bear hunting if they want more info. But good luck to you this fall and in all your endeavors, Andrew. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Andrew Try, he's the bear project leader for the Minnesota DNR. The bear hunting season kicks off this Tuesday, September 1st. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
You're out here to catch fish, not chase eggs and milk around the woods. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix is built for the outdoors. One step, no mess, no fuss. Just wet it, bread it, fry it, and get ready for the crunch that legends are made of. Grab a 12-ounce resealable bag and feed the whole crew. Fish, chicken, turkey, duck, and more. Find Chef Roberts at chefroberts.com, that's chefroberts.com, and never miss a bite.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited, conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Hunt and Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best hunting buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance Dog Food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thanks so much for tuning into the program. I hope you like what we chat about here. If so, check us out online or give us a call at 800-535-5191 or visit us out at the State Fair. We've got a booth at the corner of Judson and Nelson. You can renew your subscription there at the fair and get a free cap when you do it. I would like to spend a few minutes right now interviewing the 2026 Outdoor News Person of the Year. We did not chat with him this past spring, but you know, now is a really good time to talk to him also, because this guy's a hardcore waterfowler. We got duck seasons kicking off pretty soon. We've got a lot of wildlife management area acquisition projects occurring, and this guy is right in the middle of it. His name is Doug Hartke. He hails from Sherburne, Minnesota, which is down in Martin County. That's down right along the Iowa border, south central Minnesota. And this guy is delivering public lands in a really important part of the state, and I want to thank him for that, and I want to talk about some of the projects he's got going. Doug, thanks a lot for joining me. How you doing? You're on the road, huh?
Yeah, doing great, Rob. Thanks for the opportunity to talk DNR and wildlife management areas. Always exciting and thrilling to add public land to our acumen so there's more public access. So,
it's my understanding there are 20 wildlife management areas now in Martin County, totaling over 6,000 acres. One of our DNR sources said you're, you know, one of the driving forces behind that. You and your fellow members of the Fox Lake Conservation League. Then you're also a member of Ducks Unlimited, right? You're the state campaign chair. Yes, you've really leveraged the power of partnerships, haven't you?
It's been amazing. We I think in 2015 we had a countywide access meeting looking at trying to apply for Lessard SAMs, and we had all the stakeholders from Martin County Soil Water, FSA, Drainage Authority, DNR, PF, Ducks Unlimited. We brought everybody to the Welcome Legion and sat there for 5 or 6 hours trying to determine where we should work if we got money and how we would proceed if we were successful in, you know, receiving some grant dollars from the Lessard SAMs. We applied by ourselves in 2015. For 2016, we were awarded $1 million grant. We immediately worked with the Conservation Fund to acquire the Lorenz parcel out on the Karen WMA northwest of Sherburne, got the property bought within 4 or 5 months, got it, spent our money, ran out of money. DU come in and helped us with restorations, got it done, repeated ourselves in 2017, and the council says, you're a one-hit wonder, not capable of doing this. We have no paid staff. Who the hell's Doug Hartke? Basically said, no thanks, we're not going to do anything with you. So we revamped our processes. John Schneider was big, Steve Hobbs with the Conservation Fund. We sat down, we developed this partnership uniquely. I and our group knows our county really well, so I probably get 3-4 calls a month. And we immediately can, I could almost tell you if the DNR is interested in the parcel before I even call the DNR, but I immediately call Brian Nyborg with the Minnesota DNR out of Windham. Is there any interest in this parcel? And of course, we've got our habitat blocks. That is the number one thing that we've been successful with. We are adding to our existing habitat.
So you missed that 1 year, but like every year since, you folks have been able to deliver dollars from Lessard SAMs back to Martin County to do this habitat improvement. Doug, I'm real curious. Do you talk to guys like you in other states, and are they immensely jealous of the sales tax dedication we have here and those Lessard SAM dollars that allow you to get this work done on the ground?
You know, being active in DU also, you know, I meet a lot of people, and yeah, the Iowa people just, they've tried, and the agricultural group just won't allow it down there.
Yeah.
We're blessed. The thing that I don't like is the legislature, and this just got brought up yesterday at LSOHC, is they've supplanted all the dollars we used to get through bonding and from the state. They've just nixed it.
That's absolutely true. Yep.
We can sit there and argue every day of the week when's enough's enough. And I work with the real the agricultural people in Martin County and the commissioners, and I can honestly attest that we're not trying to buy good farmland.
No.
But when there's 80 acres of grass right next to a wetland that doesn't have any grass, you're going to take some farmland out of production. But I can tell the citizens of Martin County that 94.5% of the county we have zero interest in.
Right.
Producers usually like what I do, and most of them support us until I'm working in their backyard. If I'm in there, if it's an 80 attachable to what they want to continue to farm, we get crossways. They don't like what I do, but I feel very positive. Occasionally, we buy some good land. We do actually work with. We worked with a farmer. We split a piece I could have bought it all the day of the auction, but I set in second place and let him buy it and then sell us off the wet acres in the immediate adjacent to the WMA. We could have took it all out of production, but we worked with it. It wasn't super easy, but we're trying to do what's right.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisle, we're chatting with Doug Hartke from Sherburn, Minnesota. He's a member of the Fox Lake Conservation League, as well as Ducks Unlimited. This guy is delivering habitat on the ground in rural Minnesota, improving duck habitat and improving pheasant habitat. We appreciate what he's doing. That's why we made him the 2026 Outdoor News Man of the Year. You make that 2.5-hour drive to St. Paul quite frequently. We've got Lessard Sam's meetings going on right now, what, for next year's funding. So you're making a pitch for your next project. Is that right, Doug?
Yes, I testified yesterday morning, our partnership with the Conservation Fund and DU. We testified, I think, about 11:15 yesterday. Hopefully, feel good about it. There's more money than ever. I think there's $175 million that they're going to distribute to the multiple charities. There is over $500 million of requests. I feel we should be in good shape for funding. It's just at what level, and you know, we'll find out by the end of the month.
Doug, why is this important to you? You're a duck hunter yourself, right? You're looking forward to actually getting out some, doing some duck hunting instead of all this work soon?
Yep. There's nothing better than waking up in a marsh in a dark morning, watching a marsh wake up. It's truly, with a sunrise over decoys or even over muck, definite distinct smells. But there's nothing better than being out in a wetland river waiting for the ducks to show up.
We got that early teal season kicking off next Saturday already, September 5th. You going to be out participating in that?
I will not be. I take my daughter back to college that day, so I will not be out that weekend. Maybe I'll get back Sunday night and try to go out Monday, Tuesday.
Good. Doug, before we let you go, you've got a big wildlife management area dedication. We're going to celebrate some of this work coming up on September 19th. Tell us a little bit about the Gleam Wildlife Management Area.
The Gleam WMA, I probably didn't even know it existed until about 5, 6, or 7 years ago. I think it was a 27-acre parcel, landlocked, not even had legal access. I believe it was a parcel that was handed back to the state and ended up getting to the DNR, but it was no legal access. Well, we ended up buying through a CPL grant a small 20-acre parcel, so we had legal access to it. And then we bought 242 acres, I think, in 2024, a 232-acre parcel. Last year and a half, we bought an additional 34 acres to get a control structure and a pump moved. So now it's, I believe, about 265, or they say it's expanded now to 293 acres.
That's awesome.
And we basically removed a pump and we created a 35-acre wetland right in the middle of it. It's got great habitat. We're going to celebrate on September 19th. It's the Ducks Unlimited, one of our dedications that we do annually. We get Fox Lake and DU does one down in the Martin County area about every 3-4 years. So this is a celebration. I believe there's over 30 individuals and local companies that have pledged dollars through the Ducks Unlimited major donor program that their name will be enshrined on a rock cairn on this project on the south road of it. So we're celebrating that dedication. I think it's 10:30 on the 19th. And after the dedication, we're going to the Truman Community Building for a light luncheon to celebrate. Anybody that's willing to come out and see it, we'll have some tours, and DU biologists and staff will be there to answer questions and just talk about the restoration. You know, it's been a 3-4 year process to get it all done, but it's restored, and there's definitely ducks out there.
It's very gratifying when you see that happen. Doug, thanks for all you do for the ducks, for wetlands, for improving the state of Minnesota. If folks want more information about this Gleam WMA dedication, they can shoot you an email, DougHartke@gmail.com. They can also go to foxlakeconservation.com, I presume, and learn more about the project you've got going down there.
Absolutely, and they can hit us on Facebook too at Fox Lake. Appreciate all you guys do at Outdoor News to put this out there for us, and yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Have a great week ahead and good luck duck hunting this fall. That was Doug Hartke from the Fox Lake Conservation League and Ducks Unlimited, pulling off some great projects in southern Minnesota. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data.
Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Fall is coming, so waterfowlers, listen up. When birds are cupped over the spread, the last thing you need is a misfire. The Retay Ace's patented Inertia Plus system guarantees full bolt closure every single time. It handles light loads through 3.5-inch magnums with oversized controls for cold weather gloves, and its airy recoil pad reduces felt recoil up to 30%. Get elite performance and a lifetime warranty without the $2,000 price tag. Visit your dealer or RetailUSA.com today.
Sulfide ore copper mining threatens the health of the nation's most popular wilderness, the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, right here in Minnesota. You can help keep the BWCA clean. Join Sportsmen for the Boundary Waters, pledge to protect the integrity of this incredible wilderness and its watersheds for hunting and fishing, for clean water, and for future generations. Join other hunters and anglers in demanding permanent protection of this national treasure. Visit sportsmenbwca.org to learn more about the threats to the Boundary Waters.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Minnesota's DNR conservation officers
and state patrol troopers are on the road
and the water working to keep you safe from drunk boaters
and drunk drivers. Each year in Minnesota,
over 30% of fatal boating accidents involve alcohol.
And over 30% of deadly crashes are caused by drunk drivers.
Drunk boating
is drunk driving.
And Minnesota has zero tolerance
for either one. Don't drink and drive.
Don't drink and boat.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. You help keep water clean, improve the soil, and provide habitat for wildlife. But did you know conservation can also improve your bottom line? Learn more at conservationpays.org.
Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline and Tim Westmeister are here for our final segment. You can read us both in the print version of Outdoor News. Call us at 800-535-5191. All of that content is also at outdoornews.com. You can subscribe to that, too. You get a little cheaper rate if you just want that digital version. But again, call 800-535-5191 or go to outdoornews.com or stop out at the State Fair. We've got a big booth out there, corner of Judson and Nelson during the entire fair. Got great staff out there that want to meet you. They'll give you a free hat if you subscribe to Outdoor News, even just the cheaper digital version. You get yourself that free hat. So please visit us at the State Fair. Tim, we've got some time to talk about some fun headlines in this week's paper. Well, first off, why don't we talk about the Japanese bluegills? We spend a lot of time in fighting invasive species here in Minnesota and around North America, invasives from Asia and from Europe. Well, by golly, we got a couple invasives that have caused problems in other places. I was in England this spring, and you got gray squirrels over there. They hate those. Those are our gray squirrels. But who knew that in Japan, they released 15 bluegills in the 1960s, and now they're ubiquitous and wiping out other fisheries. Our simple, humble bluegill, who knew?
Well, they're really mad because they are wiping out this carp species that they use to make, it's like a Norwegian lutefisk,
right?
Only worse. It's called funazushi.
Yeah.
And they take these carp, and then the bluegills are wiping these carp out. It's sad, but they take these carp and they gut them through the gills. They leave the egg sacs, pack them in salt, and then they store them in barrels for 2 years.
Oh, that sounds nasty, doesn't it?
Man. Yeah, but that's not all. Then they rinse these things off and they cover them, pack them in rice. And then they store them for another year so that they'll ferment. And then they take these things out and they eat them. Now think about it. A bluegill, I can fillet them, batter them up. I can fry them. And I'm eating them in a couple hours. It's 3 years. And this is a carp. And it's, you know what it tastes like? Blue cheese. You know what? I can take a bluegill and I can fry it up and I can eat it with a chunk of blue cheese. And I think it would be a lot better. I think they should call it fun of sushi. They should call it not so fun of sushi, because I'm not sure I'd want to try that out. Although if I can get some shipped to me, I might just test it.
It's an amazing story. What the Crown Prince was visiting Chicago in like the early 1960s. And of course, you got to have good old Mayor Daley, in the middle of all this. Huh? He gave the Crown Prince 15 bluegills that I guess were from Iowa, but were at the Shedd Aquarium, which is a great aquarium if you've never been there. And the Crown Prince brought them back and put them like in the moat or something around like the, you know, their palace. And like a lot of these exotic species stories, they got loose. And I mean, now this Lake Biwa, where these carp that you just referenced are from, they figure there's like 25 million of these bluegills just in this one lake. I mean, there's all kinds of other lakes. It's the point where there's a bounty on bluegills in Japan. It's an amazing story. And it just goes to remind you, you keep these even humble species like the bluegill where they need to be. Check that out. Bob Zink did a great story on that. I encourage folks to check that out. Switching gears to California, Tim, there was talk, and it was early talk, of basically funding a study to determine if they should consider trying to reestablish grizzly bear populations in California. And this is a very strong Democratic state. And even some of the urban Democrats in California backed off and said, okay, we won't even fund a study to look at this. There was a fair amount of backlash to even just talking about the concept. I suspect I know where you fall on this.
Oh, yeah. I think they should get grizzlies back there right now. I mean, think about this. They don't have enough coyotes and black bears going in and snatching people's little chih tzus and poodles. They need the grizzly bear there, too. No way. I mean, come on. Really think about it. State of California pretty much wiped out the grizzly bears during the gold rush period. And now they want to bring them back after California is a state that's got a lot of people. Now, maybe in the North Country, you could throw a few grizzlies in there, but just like the bluegills that we talked about, you know, you bring a species into an area where there's been a void and they can reproduce really fast and they can expand very quickly. And that's what these grizzly bears are going to do. Look what the wolves have done here in northern Minnesota. And all of a sudden, you've got a lot of encounters with people that are out, you know, running and biking. And you know, the mountain lions get people out in California every once in a while. Why not throw a few grizzlies into the mix, too?
You know, my opinion on this is a little more finessed, I guess you might say. I mean, California has, count them, 60,000 black bears.
Yeah.
That's a lot of black bears. I would argue that's far too many black bears. I mean, that's triple what we've got in Minnesota. Now, it's a bigger state, obviously, with, I presume, more black bear habitat than we've got in Minnesota. But to me, it kind of feels like, and you know, black bears can get big, Tim. I mean, you can have 400 or 500 pound black bears that aren't much smaller than a interior grizzly bear. You know, if I were king, I might say, hey, let's knock this black bear population down to about half of what it is and make room for, I don't know, 500 grizzly bears.
You know, black bears and grizzly bears, that's like, black bears don't seem to be as aggressive as the grizzly bears. You know, you take a brown bear in Alaska, I'd much rather go up against a black bear in Alaska than a brown bear, the grizz.
There's a lot of black bear attacks on people, Tim, in North America, because there's just so many of them. But anyway, this is Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline with Tim Lesmeister. We are winding down this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio. Man, just a couple other short things. Campfires in the Boundary Waters. You can fire up a campfire again, Tim, in the Superior National Forest. I guess we're getting through the worst of the fire season, so I'm glad to see that. Also, DNR reminding everybody to leave the collared bears alone if they're out hunting and they see a collared bear this coming week. We talked to Andrew Try about that a little bit. The season kicks off this Tuesday, September 1. Should be some good opportunities for folks out there again this year. Speaking of black bears.
Yeah, I don't think I'd shoot a collared animal. I just think that there's too much research that can be done on those animals that might improve the hunting situations that I feel are necessary to harvest animals. So I'd probably leave a collared bear alone. But you know what happens is that you get out there, you're bear hunting, you've, on the last day, you haven't seen a bear, the bait just has not been producing. And all of a sudden, a big old bear comes up to the bait station. You got about an hour left in your hunt. Oh, no, it's got a collar. Boom. That's what you're going to do. You know why? Because that's probably your only opportunity. Yeah. So there's going to be some collared bears shot. It's legal to do it. And if you shoot one, I wouldn't feel guilty about it. But if it's early in the hunt and you see a collared bear, let it go.
Tim, I did write my story about my Alaska trip. I don't know. Is that going to offend people? I was pretty frontal about opposing the Ambler Road. A lot of coverage in this week's paper, period, about we don't need more roads across North America, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You know, I the way I see it is that you're basically destroying habitat for animals. I don't like to do that. You're going to basically be knocking down a big caribou population because you're building a road there. You're going to be destroying some waterways. You don't need to do that because you don't really need that road. I think I can't remember who made the comment that obviously the environmental people and the people that are conservationists are just don't have enough money to buy the people that are deciding that this is something that needs to be done. You know, that might be kind of a mean statement in regard to politicians, but the bottom line is that that's why this is getting done, is because somebody's obviously padding somebody's pocket, probably a mining company, and they want to get a road back to where they can do some damage to the environment. I think your article needs to be there because it educates people on the damage that can be done because people get greedy.
Encourage folks to read it at outdoornews.com or pick up a copy at the state fair. You can read my story about my trip to Alaska. Get a free copy at the state fair booth out there. Hey, finally, Tim, before we go, quick music note. You're a hardcore musician. We lost Dolly Parton this past week. It was a big story. One of the few Americans that seemed like kind of brought people of all political stripes together, her and Willie Nelson. Sorry to see Dolly pass away, age 80, you know, so wasn't super old. I believe a cancer diagnosis of some sort. Amazing lady.
Truly an amazing lady. And here's somebody that just appealed to everyone. And the stuff that she did with kids and books and
yes.
And just all of the things that on a humanitarian scale that she did, she gave a lot of money away for great causes. Mm-hmm. And I think she's going to be sorely missed. She was one that was able to, you know, be in the music scene for a long, long time while others come and go. She never went. She was here and stayed, writing songs that crossed over into pop, great songs. And it just seems to me that another great one gone. I really got a little choked up when I heard that Dolly Parton had left us, because I think she was a phenomenal entertainer and just a wonderful person.
You know, you strip away the wigs, the tight outfits, the bubbly personality, the down home twang, and you get away from all that. Ultimately, Dolly Parton was one of our greatest ever songwriters. I mean, that was her superpower. Great, great songwriter. She wrote amazing songs that she covered, and of course, other people covered. They don't make them like Dolly Parton anymore.
I thought that one of her comments, she made two quotes that I thought were just extremely great quotes. One was, you know, it takes a lot of money to look this cheap.
Well, rest in peace, Dolly Parton. Tim, thanks for spending a lot of time with me again this week. I hope you have a good week ahead.
Yeah, we'll catch up to you soon.
All right, that was our buddy Tim Westmaster. Thank you to him, all of our other guests, and thanks to all the listeners who've been with us for the past hour. We'll see you out at the State Fair. I'm Rob Gerisline, signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.